It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition with Stuart Clark and Ryan Phelan with you this morning. Thank you for being with us, and we want you to be part of the show. The open line number 1353 53. Send us an SMS 0419 767 272. A ton of SMSs asking about the Big Sports Breakfast multi. Yes, Laurie Daly is on holidays, and people have been demanding that we do the BSB multi, and Uncle Laurie has chimed in for us this week. So if you want to have a piece of the BSB multi, you go to the TAB website, click on the sports drop down and go to today's offers. And when you get there, you'll see the Big Sports Breakfast Best Multi. Now, the multi this week from Uncle Laurie is Gold Coast Race 8, number 2, Jamaya, to finish in the top 2, and to Rose Hill Race 1, number 3, Sentimental, for it to finish in the top 4. So Jamaya to finish top 2, Sentimental to finish top 4, and those odds, $10, which is pretty juicy at the moment. And what's great about that, we've had a terrific strike rate all week with the tips. We had Tim Clark during the week on Wednesday, and he rode 2 from 2 on Wednesday. And incidentally, he gave Miss Hellfire a very good push tomorrow at the Magic Millions. And we also had on fire was Brad Davidson and Adam Pengelly. Now, Adam Pengelly was tipping Sentimental tomorrow, and we had Luke Price on the show earlier, and he was tipping Jamaya. So that really all correlates with Uncle Laurie's BSB multi. So that's Gold Coast Race 8, number 2, Jamaya to finish top 2. Rose Hill Race 1, number 3, Sentimental to finish top 4. The odds for that is $10. Go to the TAB website, click on sports and today's offers, and you'll see it there at $10. Updating some scores from overnight, the Hobart Hurricanes defeated the Sydney Thunder by 9 runs at Marvel Stadium in the Big Bash, and in the doubleheader, the Melbourne Stars defeated the Melbourne Renegades by 6 wickets. South Africa, they're on the cusp of victory against India. They're 2 for 101 and require 111 runs for victory there as well. The Sony Open in Hawaii is underway. Very early stages there. Only the one Aussie out on course. That is Cameron Percy. He's currently 2 under through 11 holes. The leader there at the moment. Equal lead, Tyler Duncan and Patton Kizzia at 4 under through 9 holes. That's an update of the Sony Open. And there's an English Football League match this morning between Liverpool and Arsenal. Currently, oh, I was about to say nil all, but Liverpool had a shot on goal that might have made it very interesting. Stu Clark, who joins me as well. And Stu, we're going to be talking to Trent Copeland very shortly. And it seems as though what we've been speaking about the last couple of days with Usman Khawaja, the likelihood of that happening will be happening, and he'll be opening the batting today with Dave Warner.
Yeah, it does. It seems that's the answer that we've all been asking, or the question we've all been asking. There's the answer. You know, whether we agree or not, that's what the Australian cricket team decide. I feel really sorry for Marcus Harris. There's an SMS here from Ringer saying he's the worst opener out of 200 openers that have played 25 tests. Mate, he's a young guy coming through, and they've backed him for the call. And the first chance they've had to get rid of him, they've got rid of him.
Mm.
That's my point. Is one not got nothing to do with Usman, or you go out and make this great big statement about Marcus Harris. He's the, you know, we've guaranteed him these tests, and you know. Yes, Usman came in and got 200s, but batting at 5, not at 1. You know, and then, you know, we're getting suggestions that we should take our 3, who's the world's best batsman, according to the rankings, and we should put him to opener so we can fit Usman in there. Well, I don't understand any of that. Let's not overcomplicate this. It's a very simple solution. You've got an opener, pick him. Mm. But if he's not going well, go and find another opener and put him in there. Now we've got someone that's 35. Yes, wonderful player. Yes, did really well. Yes, got double 100. But in the middle order, and that's where he bats in Shield cricket. Not saying he can't do the job, but there's got to be some rhythm to this whole thing.
Yep.
That's my point to it. Now, I hope Usman gets, you know, he plays the next 3 years at opening the bat and gets a lot of runs because he's a quality player, and he said he's a friend of mine. But I don't get that. I'm more about the logic of how we've got to this position than I am about what the position we're in.
Yeah, if anything, he's a victim of a very well-performing Australian cricket team. But we also need to bear in mind that we're taking on an England side that probably has been a little bit toothless throughout 4 tests so far. So we'll see how they perform today in the 5th test out of Hobart. And Channel 7 will be starting their coverage from 2 o'clock today. They do a wonderful job, and one man right in the centre of this wonderful commentary team is Trent Copeland, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Trent.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Very, very well. And I'm sure Usman Khawaja will be feeling pretty good about himself as well after back-to-back tons. He looks as though he's secured his spot at the top of the order with Dave Warner. There's been, I guess, a bit of commentary around that decision. Stu Clark suggesting that maybe they should have stuck with Marcus Harris. I know a lot of people won't be surprised with Usman Khawaja at the top of the order. But your thoughts, not just for this test match, but obviously moving forward in the future of the Australian test team.
Yeah, there's a couple of things with this, and I don't know if Safraz mentioned the nuance between batting at number five and opening. I think it's not to be snubbed. There is a big difference, and the fact that Uzi has been doing it, in the past is maybe not as front of mind as the fact that he's been batting at four or five for Queensland now for many years, and then he's come in and batted at five last week and done really well. So there is a jump that needs to be made, a difference that needs to be factored in that decision. But I want to make it really simple. My take on this is when I pick Australia's cricket team, I want to pick our best team. At this moment, if you were to look explicitly at who are the best players to bat in that top six, and I think the answer is Travis Head and Usman Khawaja fit into that top six, just to the naked eye and what we've seen, barring the Melbourne innings from Marcus Harris, which was a fantastic innings, probably a game-winning innings as well. But the Australian cricket team is a brutal scenario. It is often not, are you good enough? It's who is our best. And Safraz, you could probably attest to that on a bowling front, for many, many years. And I think we're probably hitting that again now with Scott Boland and Jai Richardson and the like being so good. It's not going to be, are you good enough to play test cricket? It's unfortunately, we're going with these guys because we think that they're going to score more runs or take more wickets.
Yeah, mate. We debated it all morning and we debated it throughout the week. I just one of the things I said is we don't want to get in a scenario where guys are, you're in one game and then someone comes in and does better, you're out, because that'll create a scenario where selfish, players playing for themselves because they're worried about their spot in the team. So as long as we don't get to that scenario, I don't particularly have an issue with it. I just don't think Marcus Harris did anything wrong. Yeah, okay. I look at that whole opening the batting thing, batting in the middle order as a bigger issue. And, Marcus Harris, they backed him at the start of the season. The selectors backed him as the best player to open the batting. He does well in one test, and now he's, he's got 20 and 30 and stuff like that. Now he's gone. And what does that do for Marcus Harris's confidence? Well, not a lot.
Yeah, absolutely fair, mate. And look, at the end of the day, I think you're probably right. You can look at the raw numbers and say Marcus Harris has played, I think, 14 test matches now, and his average isn't great. But the most relevant of all of that is 2 weeks ago when he set up Australia's victory at the MCG. Boxing Day test.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. It's a difficult one for Marcus Harris, but it's also totally understandable from George Bailey and Tony Goddamade and Justin Langer.
Yeah, so, yeah, look.
So what's the road back, Trent, do you think, for Marcus Harris? I mean, he was so well supported. Now he's got to fight his way back into this side.
Yeah, which is also what you want. You do want players to know that they have to fight their way back into the team. But it's a tough one because if you ask any of the domestic cricketers around the country, what was the lead up to this test series and who would you say was the person that was absolutely the standout for that position? And it was Marcus Harris. So he just needs to do what he has been doing, is my take on it. And I think given an opportunity, and certainly Usman and Dave Warner at the top of the order aren't spring chickens by any stretch. So I think there's going to be opportunities there, and guys like Will Pekowski and numerous others are going to have to stick their hand up.
That's exactly right. That one name, Pekowski, is the one that we want to see back playing cricket sooner rather than later, because we know the troubles. We saw how good he was in the one test he did play. What do you think will happen from a bowling lineup, mate?
I think we'll see Scott Boland again. I also think we'll see Mitch Stark play. Rotation and resting is a dirty word in my mind. I may be different to most, but I think Mitch Stark, probably prior to last week, was looking at man of the series. Mm. In terms of what he had done in the absence of Cummins and Hazelwood in Adelaide, I thought he and Nathan Lyon were outstanding in getting that victory. And then you look at the season in general, including the World Cup and numerous other things. And I think Starkey's in as good a form as I've seen him for a long time. So I think, and he said it a few times, tongue-in-cheek in the media, he's, well, they can drop me if they want, but I'm certainly not putting my hand up for a rest. So I think we'll see that happen. And then, yeah, Scotty Boland, from all reports, got through the net session last night.
He had some sort of side strain, didn't he?
He fell on himself. He followed through big barrel. So he's not a slight young man. So yeah, he was apparently carrying that and just wanted to see how he pulled up with obviously the workload that he's gone through as well. So what an amazing start to a test career. Vernon Philander like almost. Hopefully he gets through because it could be quite fruitful for the bowlers this week, I think.
We talk about Marcus Harris being unlucky missing out. You've got to say the same about Jai Richardson, who was terrific in Adelaide. You think you would almost be getting better conditions for Jai Richardson as it would appear in Hobart for him to be bowling. So he's a guy that I think would have loved to have been out there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is part of, you talk about Marcus Harris and Usman Khawaja, even Travis Head coming back in after contracting COVID. Very similar scenario to Jai Richardson and what's happened. So, look, we're in an extremely fortunate scenario. The bowling stocks remind me of, you know, sort of 15 years ago where, in a batting sense, there was just guys just lining up that were ready to go. And the great thing that I'm seeing, and Staff, as you can probably attest to this as well, is Scott Boland is not doing anything that he doesn't do at domestic cricket. He bowls exactly the same. He has done for 10 years. The great thing is that he's come in and done what he does at the level below and felt comfortable to express himself and settle into a groove straight away. Jai Richardson the same. So it's exciting, but you're right. I think it's, you know, potentially harsh on Jai, but it is what it is.
Yeah, unfortunately, it is what it is. The whole comment you made then, yeah, that's why we like seeing guys earn their stripes to play for Australia in domestic cricket rather than watching guys develop under our eyes, in front of our eyes, I suppose, on TV in international cricket. And that's the system that used to be in place. It sort of changed a little bit over the years where it became about what is, you know, and you made your comment then earlier about, you know, rotation. It became about what's the future look like rather than what does the present look like. And I think, there's ways to look at that, especially from a bowling point of view. They've earned their stripes, Scott Boland in particular, throughout the years, and it's no surprise he's done really, really well because he's been doing it really, really well for a few years now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is you look into England's camp pre-series and the preempting what's going to happen at certain venues, or certainly outwardly facing, that's the way it seems, on targeting Adelaide. That's where Broad and Anderson will play, certain games. But turn up, pick your best team for the equation you've got right in front of you, and particularly the wicket you've got to play on.
I think it's also happened during the game as well with Mark Wood, and I was talking about it on air. They came in with a preconceived plan that Mark Wood can only bowl four overs in a row, and they had Australia in the second innings of the Sydney Test match, four down, and two new players, Cameron Green had just come to the crease, and Usman Khawaja had just come to the crease, and Wood was their most potent opportunity to pick up a wicket, and he got his wicket, I think, right at the end of his fourth over, or that wicket came, and they didn't bowl him for a fifth or a sixth over, and it gave time for Usman to settle in, and gave time for Cameron Green to settle in, and the next thing you know, we piled on the runs. They've come with a very, very set standard, this is what we're going to do, and the game's too fluid for that.
Yeah, totally agree. Even the, you think about David Warner, what would he have been doing for 3 months leading up to an Ashes? He would have been fretting about facing Stuart Broad around the wicket. And he did not play that first game. Yeah. And then, you may have had a preconceived idea that Wood, after playing at the Gabba, might rest for Adelaide where it might be a bit more seam friendly. Well, he bowled 25 overs up there, but he's then rested for the next game. They barely bowled in the second inning. So it's just been a little baffling in that front. But you know what? I'm just thrilled that we had such a great contest last week. Test cricket at its purest. Even though we came out with a draw, I think my wife would say it's silly, but everyone else, particularly in the cricket world, thinks it's beautiful.
Well, it's different conditions today. It's a fifth test with the pink ball, day, night. And from what we've seen with pitches, it looks as though it's a bit of a green top down there. Trent, have you had a chance to have a look at the wicket? And If so, what do you think they'll do, whoever wins the toss?
Yeah, I have seen the wicket. It is that lime green colour, but we know Hobart is very similar to England in terms of the overhead conditions and the depth of the soil underneath and how hard it is probably most crucial. It normally does move around a lot down there, and I think under light it will still do that. But I think overhead conditions might play a big part, particularly during the day phase of these games. So, look, I think you'll see teams going in with, you know, seam heavy attacks, and there's going to be lots happening with the ball, but there's certainly plenty of runs on offer for guys. I vividly remember Davey Warner down there against New Zealand carrying his bat, even though that was a loss. I think he was absolutely outstanding, and that's the tonic if you're going to be successful. Good selection, getting a bit of luck, playing and missing and things like that, but it's going to be fun to watch, that's for sure.
So win, toss, bat first, you reckon?
I think so, yeah, and then you sort of set you up for bowling under lights the most when you do that as well. So I think that's generally the way forward for day-night cricket down in Hobart.
Trent, are you surprised about the commentary around Justin Langer? Here we are on the back of the Aussies winning a T20 World Cup and retaining the Ashes, and there's a lot of chat about him not being renewed and potentially he maybe even lost the playing group. And now we've got a tough tour coming up in the subcontinent with an eye on that as well. Your thoughts on the scrutiny around Justin Langer?
Oh, I could talk about this for probably half an hour, I think. look, my take on it is a lot of the hesitancy to say, yes, we're going to give a new contract. Yes, for sure, we love what Justin's doing from the player side of things, but even Nick Hockley and anyone else that's referenced it directly this summer, I think it's more to do with just taking stock and reassessing what our national coach looks like and the role, because that coach is away over 300 days of the year. Crossing over of formats means, you know, that players are often in different countries. We've almost got two teams for white ball cricket and test cricket. My take on it is that, yes, things have markedly improved since there was, you know, potentially an intervention almost after last summer against India. This has probably been the most successful stretch of Justin Langer in the Australian cricket team's career while he's been at the helm. So results certainly have been great. But my personal opinion is that we're going to see a push for split coaches. And whether that's a white ball coach and a red ball coach, or whether that's a...
Do you have to have a pink ball coach too?
You might have to, Safran.
Just a bowler.
Yeah, exactly.
So well, just on that, if let's say, for instance, if they do stick with Langer as the test coach and Andrew McDonald and Michael DiVenuto with the white ball, do you think they can all work together?
I think that they can, yes. And one of the real strengths of the current team setup is I think the players actually really, really respect and lean on Michael DiVenuto and Andrew McDonald a lot. And I think in a world where either of those guys became head coach, I think that would fully function, you know, if Justin Langer was to step down or move on or whatever that would be. That's how much those guys are liked. But I think there's plenty of other candidates that if the roles were split, we might see, you know, likes of Ricky Ponting or Trevor Bayliss step into, okay, well, that's potentially an equation that I would coach Australia, whereas at the moment it's probably, you know, keeping a select few out of that role.
Yeah, mate, look, that's to all play out after this series here, and then we've got the tour of Pakistan, but I dare say we'll know what's going to happen with Justin and the Australian coaching setup over the next couple of weeks. Enjoy the test match down there in Hobart. Travel safely throughout the test, and we'll speak to you again soon, mate.
What's your tip quickly, Trent?
Oh, come on, this is an easy one.
Do you think it'll go 5 days?
Oh, okay.
No, I do not think it'll go 5 days, and I think Australia will win pretty comfortably. But I'll certainly be enjoying the contest, because when the bowlers do well, I like it.
Yeah,
and we love your commentary on Channel 7, as I mentioned, Trent. Always very, very insightful and spot on. You and the entire team are doing a great job. We've really enjoyed it this summer. So thanks for joining us this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast.
Cheers, guys. Have a good one.
Trent Copeland joining us from the Channel 7 cricket commentary team. And of course, the test gets underway from 3 o'clock today, but coverage on Channel 7 starts from 2 p.m. A pink ball test where Australia have retained the Ashes, and can they put the sword through England once again? We'll watch it all unfold over the next, well, I was about to say 5 days. Maybe it won't get to five days.
Trent's not holding on for five there, is he? It's got that greenish tinge to it, the wicket. So you'd imagine greenish wicket, underlights, pink ball.
They're Mitchell's the sort of conditions that would have made your eyes light up in the day, wouldn't
starting
they?
Starting to do a few back stretches as we speak. Not that that would make any difference at all.
I tell you what, it would be very hard to push you away into this bowling lineup the way things are going at the moment. That's for sure and certain. Even a champion of your caliber, Stu.
It was a long time ago. Back when the dinosaurs were running around on the earth, I was playing this game. So yeah. Anyway, I'll look forward to watching.
Looking forward to the cricket today. It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition. Give us a call on the open line number 1353. 353. Live scores this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast. The English Football League Cup semi-final between Liverpool and Arsenal is at half-time, and it's nil all at the moment, but Arsenal does have a red card there to Granit Xhaka. So interesting to see how that second half plays out, and we'll keep you updated with that as well. Also, live scores with the Sony Open. Only the one Aussie out on course, and that is Cameron Percy. He's 2 under through 13 holes, with the leader at the moment, Tyler Duncan, who's 6 under through 12 holes. But there's another five Aussies to get out on a course there. Cam Davis, Mark Leishman, Matt Jones, Cameron Smith, who, of course, won the Tournament of Champions earlier in the week, and Brad Druitt as well. So good luck to those Aussies. Scores overnight, the Hobart Hurricanes defeated the Sydney Thunder by 9 runs at Marvel Stadium in a doubleheader. In the Big Bash, Melbourne Stars defeated Melbourne Renegades by 6 wickets. And still with cricket, South Africa, they're close to victory over India. They're 2 for 101 and require 111 runs for victory there. Also overnight, the Illawarra Hawks defeated the Sydney Kings 97-89. And in the next hour, we'll be talking to Brad Rosen, Big Sports Breakfast basketball expert, about what's going to be a big round in the NBL. They've had some COVID dramas to start the year, but they're underway with 6 big matches still to come after kicking off with the Hawks and the Kings last night. Brendan Parnell, Racing Queensland CEO, will also join us to talk the Magic Millions, and Robbie Slater will be talking football as well.
Yeah, plenty to come. 1353 53 53. If you want to give us a call, 0419 767 772 is the SMS line. There are plenty of SMSs in relation to the cricket, Ryan. There's plenty going on. Will Osman open in the subcontinent from Andrew? You'd have to say he would. I don't think that's now that they've made that decision. Lads, Marcus Harris is a victim of the incorrect decision before the series. Osman should have always been in the side. Well, I've always said that. I think that is probably right. It's almost an admission that you got it wrong. Which is cool. Maybe they should come out and say
but
that.
But, you know, what point you make is valid too. Is the future of this Australian cricket team with 2 35-year-olds at the top of the order? I mean, you got to give a young bloke a chance. Marcus Harris is 29, and he didn't bat poorly throughout this series. He just didn't bat as well as a lot of his counterparts like Usman Khawaja and Travis Head. And, you know, obviously, Dave Warner and Usman Khawaja aren't going to be sticking around for too long, you wouldn't thought.
Well, you're going to go to the, you know, you're almost building Ashes series. If you think about it in a cycle, it's Ashes series to Ashes series, home and away. So every 2 years there's an Ashes series. Do you want to 35-year-olds? You know, David Warner's record, with complete respect, because he's been a wonderful player for Australia in England, has not been great. Will Broad be around in 2 years' time? Who knows? He's 35. He'll be 37/38, depending on when the series is on. Does he want to face up to that again? Jimmy Anderson, you'd imagine, won't be around, but who knows? But when the ball's swinging around, David Warner hasn't been at his best. So that's a really big question. Then Usman Khawaja. So then you've got two fairly inexperienced openers going into England against the Duke ball. You know, Smith will be 34, so he's not getting any younger. Mm. There's some questions around what needs to be done. So anyway, look, we'll see what'll happen. But you know, first of all, this test match, then Pakistan, and the subcontinental series to go.
And this question on the text, hypothetical: what would have happened if Harris scored 100 in Sydney? I would make the point that if Usman didn't get back-to-back centuries, if he got the first century, okay, I think he still would have been in the same position. And if he failed and maybe got less than 20, I think there was probably no chance that he would have taken Harris's spot. Would you have agreed with that, do you think?
Well, yeah, I don't know. That's sort of it, you know. I think the 200s accentuated the point.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably an interesting question. But, you know, he got 25 or 30 in the second inning. So they're all the questions that will never need to be answered, I suppose. Mm. But, you know, what happens if Usman misses out a couple of times? Yep. There's another question that will come there. More SMSs. Hey, Uncle Laurie, will he take over from Laurie? Because is his form as good as Laurie? That's Stephen from Wagga in relation to his multi. Put it this way. If Uncle Laurie does well, I'm going to make a call that Laurie's multi's gone and Uncle Laurie's the man.
Oof. He's got a big following, Laurie Daly. I don't know how he gets duck eggs more than not, but
it's become a bit of a running joke, hasn't it?
Very big following. Yes, Uncle Laurie has got the Big Sports Breakfast multi, which you can find on the TAB website. You go to Sport and Today's Offers, and the Big Sports Breakfast multi is Gold Coast Race 8, number 2, Jamea, to finish top 2. And Rose Hill Race 1, number 3, Sentimental, to finish top 4, you get $10 if that gets up.
And
pretty good
Laurie,
odds.
Uncle Laurie, from All Reports, talking to Vonnie, can tip.
Yeah. Now, another message has come through here. G'day, team. Has Jamie got any mail for us on Ruby Kisses at 100-1 tomorrow? Azza, look, I don't think the camp is very confident that they can win the race, but we're cheering Jamie to beat home the other female-owned horse in that race, because I think there's $160,000 on offer.
No, $250.
No, it's $160,000, I think, for the...
For the winner, for, of course.
For who wins the
two between the two
between
of them.
Between the two. And that other horse is Glorious Ruby, who's drawn better than it and Barrier 3. So I guess that's what's Jamie's... You know, they could finish second, last and last, but it's just who finishes in front of the other
exactly
one.
Exactly right. There's only one race going on there.
But we can give you a tip in that race, because we did speak with Luke Price earlier and he was very, very keen on Jamea, who currently is the favourite in that race. But we're taking your calls this morning, 1353 53. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
Very good, well. Thanks. What do you got for us?
I've got a question for Stuart Clark there.
Yeah.
Stuart, mate, look, I'm the secretary of the Casino Magpies Cricket Club in Northern Rivers, on off coast, New South Wales. Mate, we're actually a bit short in our first grade this week. You keen for a game or what?
How long's it going to take me to get there?
Whereabouts are you?
I'm in, say, the city, Sydney.
Mate, if you leave at like 10, 11 o'clock, you'll get here.
Can you incentivize this in any way, Joe?
Just before you go, Joe, I'll say this openly. I got offered to go to India and play in this Masters tournament in February and March this year. And, you know, would you go over to India? And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I realised I haven't played for 10 years. I've had the odd game here and there. And then someone said to me, do you know the Indians and the Sri Lankans, they actually train for this. And, you know, some of them are still playing first-class cricket. It's just a Masters Legends type tournament type thing. And they're bowling like 135, 100. Some of the, you know, I think Maruf that played for Sri Lanka, he's still bowling like 140 kilometres an hour. And Tino Best still bowling, you know, you see him on TV occasionally. I'd kick my stumps over, mate. I'd be that scared.
I think we've lost.
Listen, if you make the drive, we'll supply a carton, we'll supply the Voltaren.
You're going to need more than Voltaren. You need plenty of Panadol and something a tad stronger.
Mate,
I reckon.
You'd need a needle directly into the muscle, I reckon.
Mate, we'll work something out, brother.
I'll see. Maybe I can't make it this week. Maybe next week. We'll see.
Right, mate. I'll make a call next week and see if you're available.
Good man. Good on you, Jay. You have a good day and good luck tomorrow, mate. Hope good to on hear you.
Go the Aussies and end up the Magpies.
Good on you, Joe. Thanks for your call. Hey, just on that, I know times when I've, you know, rolled the arm over, I am as sore as anything the next day. So, I mean, how often do you roll the arm over these days?
I don't.
You don't? So you'd pull up really sore.
Occasionally I bowl in the nets to the kids, you know, my son, or, you know, stuffing around, have a bit of fun. I still play soccer, like over 45 soccer now. So I still run around okay.
Yeah.
I just don't bowl anymore. I struggle to throw a lot, you know, just because I just don't do it. If I went and did some practice for a little while, I'd probably get, my body would get used to it. But the glory days are over, Ryan. Let's be honest, mate. The glory days are behind me.
And you look good on Crick Info. Let's just leave that way.
I'm a few kilos heavier than I was when I was playing. You know, there's a few things working against me here.
Now, the Stars are out for the NBL. You can catch every unmissable game of the biggest NBL season yet live on ESPN with KO. NBA legend Matthew Dellavedova returns home. Plus, watch out for potential 2022 NBA draft picks in Usman Dieng and Kai Soto, with 7-foot Chinese star Zhu Qi and 3-time MVP Bryce Cotton sure to light up the court. Watch every NBL game live on ESPN with KO. And in the next hour, we're going to be talking with Brad Rosen about all things NBL. And it's time to talk the Magic Millions. The countdown is on. Tomorrow, we will see the 2-year-old and 3-year-old classics playing out. Coolangatta is the hot favourite at the moment. Let's find out whether the Mar Eustace runner can do it, or will Brad Davidson be tipping something at a little bit more value? Good morning, Brad.
Yeah, morning, Ryan. Morning, everyone. How are we, guys?
Very well. Look, all the talk has been Coolangatta at the moment. I think when we first started speaking earlier in the week, Brad, $1.80, now out to $2. I get the feeling that she might start even longer. I wouldn't be surprised if she maybe touches about $2.40 on Saturday. Do you think she's the one to beat?
Yeah, look, I do. I must admit, I'm a little bit surprised by the betting drift. Generally, when that's the case in the week, Ryan, you're right, it continues on race day when they start to get out. We see these favourites go up short odds sometimes, and generally that early trend does continue late in the piece. So it might be one of those. I know that her last start win wasn't in fantastic time, and a lot of databases and rating experts actually have the second favourite running a better figure than she did their last time out. But I think the key with her is her Gymcrack win rated a lot better than anything else in the race here. And I just think that first up win, this preparation was just a bit of a hit out, just to blow the cobwebs out. It was her first go at 1,200 metres. She was taken on up on speed. She was a bit fresh in the run. And I actually thought it was a pretty good win. Yes, she didn't smash the clock, but she ran time in the Gymcrack. So we know she can do it. The stable of masters at picking a horse on the right day. And I actually think the barrier draw as well, I know a few people suggesting it's not the ideal draw. I think it's perfect because she can just, the other day, first up, she was dictated to, in a way, from horses on her outside, where she can actually dictate to them this time. She can decide what she does from that gate, whether she rolls forward or whether she just parks off a couple. But yeah, I think she's going to peak on the day. I think she's going to get back to that Gymcrack win. And if she does, I think they'll struggle to beat her. I really think that she's getting out to an appealing price now. And, hopefully you're right, Ryan. Guess at $2.40, I'll be definitely taking that come race time.
Yeah, so she's $2 at the moment, Brad. On the second line is Russian Conquest at $6.50. And on the third line, Miss Hellfire at $10, who Tim Clark gave a really good push to when we had him on the show on Wednesday morning. If there is a chink in Coolangatta's armour, who do you think would be most likely to come over the top of her?
Probably Miss Hellfire, just the one that's had the run last week. And sometimes these horses on the back up can run really well in the Magic Millions 2-year-old classic. So Russian Conquest, I do concede the chance, but I just feel that I'm not sure if she's got that extra level that she needs to go to win this race. So I think everything panned out perfectly for her at Randwick last time out, where she set off a hot speed and was there to run a really good time. So I'm just thinking maybe she's the one that doesn't have that ability to go to the next level, where Miss Hellfire is the one that's coming, I suppose, peaking at the right time. And you know, that win last week was pretty good in solid time too. So she's probably the one I'm most worried about. But like I said, I think she's pretty classy, Coolangatta, and I think she's the best 2-year-old we've seen at the moment. And I think she'll get the job done on Saturday.
Just got a text coming through from Azza saying, can you ask Brad about Cusack for the Bussin and Young team? Obviously a good win down there at Ballarat, but has had the benefit of two trials up there on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, has done. And look, definitely not hopeless. I couldn't, if the punter wants to sort of play there and have a bet with that horse, I couldn't talk them out of it, that's for sure. Whether that's the right form, generally speaking, it's not. In the past, it hasn't been, but you know, it's gone up there. It's had a couple of trials on the Gold Coast and have a couple of hit outs there. I always love the fact that they are able to have a look at the track before for the big day. That's important, and get used to the surroundings, particularly for those young two-year-olds. So could talk you out of it if you want to have a play at odds, but like I said, I think that it's cool and Gatta's race to lose.
Now, all the talk's obviously about the Magic Millions, but there's also races at Rose Hill tomorrow, and you like Metallicity.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see this horse debut, guys. And we talk about the two-year-old pitcher and the Golden Slipper in a few months' time. I think it's fair to say at this time that there hasn't been too much to come out of the woodwork. We've had Cool and Gatta, but really, in terms of the Golden Slipper pitcher, there's still a fair bit to play out, I think. And this might be one that can add to the mix on Saturday. Metallicity is the first starter for the Snowden Yard, and the two trials have been very good. He's a horse that covers the ground with his massive action. He's, and in his trials, he looks like he's going two to their one in terms of covering the ground. They look like they're taking two strides to his one. That's how well he covers the ground. So he's had two trials. He's won them both in good time. And just the last 100 metres of both trials, he's been really strong that last little bit. So I see he's been $101 into $26 for the Golden Slipper. They put up $2.60 for the two-year-old race at Rose Hill tomorrow. And he was $232 straight away. I haven't seen a horse move that fast for a while. So I'm not sure whether the bookies will be risking him, because there's a few there that have trialed okay in that race. Pretty much a race full of first starters. There's only one horse in the race that's actually had one start down the bottom, Street Smarts for Matty Dunn, who finished well back in a gym crack. But the rest of them are all first starters. So always a bit tricky lining them all up. But like I said, sometimes you just see a trial and you go, that looks like a really nice horse. And just the stride, the action of the horse and the time he's been running, I think he'll be extremely hard to beat at Rose Hill tomorrow, and might be one we're talking about on Monday about a Golden Slipper chance.
So Metallicity, your best bet, currently $2 with Tab. What else do you like there at Rose Hill tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm playing a few shorties at this stage. Race 7, number 2, the Bopper as well, I think will get the job done. He was a brilliant winner first up there at Randwick. He missed the start and was held up for half the straight and still beat them over 1,000. So I don't think he's a 1,000-metre horse either. So I think stepping up to 1,100 is going to suit him there. He should jump better this time as well, because he's not a horse that has a habit of missing the jump. So I'm just thinking that might have been a one-off there first up. So thinking he can get the job done in race 7, number 2. And if I was to give another shorty, if punters want to play a bit of an all-up or something like that, I mean, you could throw Cool and Gatta into there as well. If you're looking for another one, I'd give you race 5, I think it is, number 8, Sword Point, who I think can beat the stable 8 Niffler, who's doing a good job, but I just think he's a bit more progressive. He should have won at Warwick Farm last time out. I think he's crying out for 2,000 metres. He gets the chance to show that on Saturday, and I think he'll just be a little bit too sharp for Niffler, who's racing well, but probably lacks that real dash at the end of the last 100 metres in her races at the moment.
Just back to your best, one of your best there with the Bopper, Brad. Similar to you, I looked at it, I had it in my black book and I was ready to go, okay, the Bopper. But also in my black book, I had Mr. Mosaic, who was not entitled to win last start. It was a massive run. And also Bellucci Babe goes well fresh with the claim. Did you obviously rate the Bopper well ahead of those?
Yeah, it's definitely no gimme. It's a race where Bellucci Babe, as you said, got a terrific fresh record. She's trialled well. She won first up last preparation. I thought she was the clear danger. And Mr. Mosaic, as you said, fought off a canvas last time out. He looked absolutely gone at the 300-metre mark and somehow found a way to win. So they're definitely the dangers. I think I've got them second and third pick and horses that I'm a bit worried about. It's that time of the year, though, where racing is pretty even, and I'm just hoping that the Bopper off that first up win. I just like the way Chris Lees was talking about him leading into it. He was always been very reserved about his horse, Chris, but leading into this preparation, he said, I think he's come back a lot better, and we saw that first up. So I'm just hoping he can go on with the job, but definitely respecting those two horses for sure.
Good on you, Brad. Look forward to your coverage on Sky Racing tomorrow, and hopefully a few winners at Rose Hill as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll chat to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Great job this week, and talk to you soon.